Tonight, Pretty Late favorite Senator Dan Katowski and Michael Silver ride sidecar. Then later, we'll find out more about the Eat in the Dark fundraiser. And finally, Eric Elk and Ken J. Kubowski stop by. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Thursday night, November 17th, we are in the Allstate Showcase studio. Thank you so much for joining us. In studio with me is Senator Dan Katowski, who is now the CEO of ChildServe, an organization helping at-risk children live happier, healthier lives. Excellent gala last week, by the way. It was a lot of fun to host that, so thank you for having me.
It was so great to have you there.
Really wonderful. Now, how did you guys end up doing with the fundraising?
We did very well. We doubled what we brought in last year. We doubled the amount
really?
Of people. We doubled.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was, you know, I call it the Patty Vasquez formula.
Will you let me host next year?
Of course.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Of course. You know that music that comes in? It's like you're...
One Girl Revolution?
Yeah, totally. It's like you're the Dan Tana. You're like the Vegas Knight Rider. It's great music. It's
my
like,
voice coming in the middle
of the
night.
No, like it's just the music. Mm. It's like you have this action. Like it's your own action show. Right.
Like we should probably. I know. I wonder. I don't know if I need it. I think that's my theme song. I think it's a good intro.
It's got a lot of power. It's got a lot of juice.
Why are you turning this on me when I'm trying to congratulate you on something remarkable?
Because that's what I'm good at.
Yeah. Why would
it's
you?
It's not
do
about
that?
Me. It's how I was raised by a Jesuit and a nun.
Is that what Jesuit and a, wait? You were raised by a nun?
My mom was in the convent for a year.
Are you supposed to tell people that?
Yeah.
I was wonderful
it
hanging out
happen.
With your parents.
It didn't happen.
I know.
They didn't meet each other. they didn't consummate it when they were in their respective orders.
It's a fun story, though.
It is a really good story.
How did they meet?
They met. My father was in the Jesuits, and he was getting ready to leave. And so my mother's family would always have, they lived right next to Loyola University, and they used to have the Jesuits over because my grandfather taught at Loyola University, taught math there. He was also coached basketball for a period of time there. And he would have the Jesuits over. And they had six,
the Jesuits are coming. Do they say
six
that
daughters.
When the doorbell rings, do you say the Jesuits
are
here?
Yeah, the Jesuits are coming. But the Jesuits, you know, very worldly, interesting group. And they would have them over for dinner on a Sunday night. And my father came over there with a guy who was also another Jesuit. And my grandmother, who's no longer alive, was lamenting the fact that said, the last Jesuit was here. I didn't realize it, but it was his last... It was his last week in the Jesuits. He never told us. And my father's there, and he's thinking, oh, my God, I'm thinking of leaving the Jesuits. She's going to think that I'm the cause, that she's the cause of my leaving or that, you know, she doesn't want to be connected to that because she really...
She drives the Jesuits
away. She had a
passion
for the church, right? She's the... But my father, on a whim, he was getting ready to go to Florida. He met my mom that night, and he was getting ready to leave, and he just called her up, and he said, would you like to go out for, you know, coffee? And they went out.
And she then, was, but she was out of the, she had left the convent already.
She had left the convent before that. Yeah, she was
okay,
back
good.
And like,
I wasn't
yeah,
sure.
And they went out, and then my father ended up staying, and the rest is history. Five kids later.
Oh, well, there you go. What a great story.
Isn't that cool?
That's very cool.
Yeah. So the point is, anytime I get a compliment, you would think that I would really relish in it. As I really don't. I feel like the building's going to cave in on me because humility.
You tell me, but you give me a hard time when I can't take a compliment.
I know. I'm the same way. Although I do a better job of being say thank you very much.
I've learned how to say thank you very
much.
You
really, yeah, you're getting better.
I'm getting better.
You are getting much
better. How do you like our Christmas decorations in the studio?
It's very festive. It's very festive.
Well, did you see the window? Like we have a display window. Well, you can't see it from here, but behind Craig, there's a door there, and people on Michigan Avenue can see this really wonderful Christmas display. Like you know, the window display is when you come downtown.
Like Macy's.
Yes. Well, it used to be Marshall Field. It's hard.
It's very hard to call
but,
it that.
But it's a really cute decorated window display by Tree Time. So thank you so much,
like,
Tree Time.
Yeah, the Tree Time, and they say 720 on the ornaments.
I know, WGN all around the studio. If you go to WGNradio.com, you can see just how festive the studio is. And we have a new wrap, too. We've the walls have been redone with our Allstate Showcase studio logos.
Do you remember last year when we were here and then the carolers came?
Yes.
And they sung? Wasn't that cool?
It was very cool.
Yeah,
we need to do
fun.
That again. It's a lot of fun. We are hanging out in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I want to talk about a story that came up in the Chicago Tribune by two investigative reporters. I've actually invited them to come on the show next week, but I want to touch on it a little bit because it does actually have to do directly with legislation that was voted down yesterday, and I want to talk a little bit about that when we come home. It has to do with the care that adults with disabilities receive in group homes. I know this is a long story. We're going to do just one quick segment on it, but if you live in the state of Illinois. This is an important story. I think that we can do better than this for our most vulnerable. I know that we're all talking about how, well, you know, the governor, can't pass something like that if we don't have funds. So I want to talk about how that works, because everyone's saying that, well, if there's no money there, then we can't take care of our most vulnerable. I'm not sure how we choose that group in particular to suffer the most. But more than 43 individuals in the state of Illinois have died as a result of abuse and neglect in group homes. And I think there's something we can do about that, because we can do better. We can be better. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski, who now works with ChildServe. He's the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children lead happier and healthier lives. I want to talk about this piece that I read in the Chicago Tribune. I know that I linked you to it, but I know it's, you know, in the course of a day. One, it's a pretty lengthy piece. They did a lot of investigative reporting on this. And if you go to the ChicagoTribune.com, or if you go to my Facebook page, you can go to Patty V Show on Facebook, and I have a link to the article. And this is one of the most tragic things I've seen in a long time. There was a young man who was beaten to death by his caregiver because he was accused of stealing cookies. And there are individuals who have languished for, you know, days and weeks on end in their own feces, in their own dirty beds. They have bed sores. They are not being taken care of. There are others who have been sexually assaulted. There's a lot that we kind of turn our backs on. We go, well, these are group homes. It feels as though that's the cost of having institutions or group homes for people with disabilities. It's like every time it happens, we're like, oh, that's horrible. And then we don't do very much about it. I know when I met with Governor Quinn, you introduced me to him when I came down several years ago. He was talking about the legal actions that were taken, and they were trying to move away from institutions. But the problem being that those group homes don't have to have a nurse on staff, because the population is only about 6 to 8 people in those homes. So they don't have they're not legally required to have a nurse. So if anyone is suffering or injured or having issues, they're not seen by a medical professional for possibly days, weeks, before something even gets worse. So, Senator Katowski, I know that you no longer work in Springfield, but I know that you're familiar with the struggle, the battle over budget, over funding. And when I posted this, I said, call your legislators, call Governor Rauner, tell them this is unacceptable, because yesterday they vetoed spending $330 million to increase the pay for caregivers, because many of these people are unqualified. And they also have 30% unemployment. There's 30% of those jobs go unfilled, because people would rather go and work at a job that doesn't, it's grueling work. It's exhausting. It's important work. But $9.50 is not going to do it. How much are our prison guards paid? And I know that I hate to make that comparison, but, you know, people want, you know, they want to have these very strict penalties for a lot of different crimes, and they will pay more for people to be incarcerated than they will to care for our most vulnerable. Right. And it makes me angry that more than 40 individuals have died over the last few years at the hands of caregivers.
Yeah, this is first of all, prison guards are paid considerably more money. And this is a couple thoughts that I have. This is this byproduct of the otherness of what has happened with our decisions in government. The otherness is like, well, these folks are over there. They're not a part of us. They're other.
They're not our problem.
Just even the definition of vulnerable. Well, that means, well, if you're not vulnerable, you're not a part of it.
Right. You're not contributing somehow.
You're not contributing.
You're not a taxpayer.
I don't really have to worry about you. If I don't have kids who are vulnerable, why would I worry? Why would I worry?
Right.
And the point is, but there was other decision the state made this decision to deinstitutionalize, take kids out of these larger residential settings and put them in group settings, but the money didn't follow it. The same way the money didn't follow it with the PUNS list. The money didn't follow the prioritization of urgency of need services and respite care for families who have kids with developmental challenges and adults.
Right.
So one of these things, there's something, it hasn't penetrated, right? And what are the conditions which underlie these challenges, and what causes us to get here.
Right.
And I think as long as people, I think what is, people have tried to say that there's 42 kids have died, right?
Right.
And people are like, well, no way that this could have possibly happened. But for some reason, we're not getting the response that we should. Like, death and horrific treatment of individuals is not prompting people in positions of leadership to respond. Right. In the way that they should. And the question we have to ask ourselves is why? And I think, as I was talking to you on the break, it's like, well, all of these children and adults are connected to families. And all of these families are hardworking people. They pay taxes. they're making decisions at their kitchen tables every night to figure out ways how they're going to balance their budget and take care of their families for the future.
Right.
And all of these families are making decisions like, well, how am I going to take care of my child when they become an adult for the rest of their life? And what happens when I, as a parent, passes away? And the discussion that we've been having is like on the otherness. It's about just the individual who's the vulnerable child or adult, and not about their families, and not about the community, and not about the overall societal impact. It's just about, and it should be enough, right? It should be enough that it's compelling that a child or an adult has lost their lives in one of those facilities. But for some reason, it's not penetrating. And I think it's because we're not engaging all the other aspects. Who's involved in that life?
Right.
And we have caregivers. We have these facilities that are run. We have parents, family members, aunts, uncles.
And the caregivers. This takes a toll on caregivers as well. The people who work there, you know, if there are 30% of the jobs are going unfilled, right, because the wage is not enough, wouldn't it stand to reason that if they raise the wage and could fill those 30% of those jobs, then you have more taxpayers? This seems like a work situation as well.
Well, let me tell you something. In my work, you know, we work with children who are at risk, children who suffer from abuse and neglect. And there is a very high turnover in our industry.
Right.
And it is the job that you're talking about, being caregivers for people who have developmental challenges, special needs, is that much more difficult.
Right.
It's that much more difficult. And I could tell you this, the people work in our group homes, and these are just like these group homes you're talking about for kids ages 12 to 17. It's a high burnout rate in the job.
Right.
It's a very challenging job. It's not a well-paid job. It is what people like literally call God's work. Because
right.
You're doing the work that is really looking out for people who have these challenges, that they should have a great quality of life.
And we should value the people who are doing the most noble work. And this is something that will continue. It's only going to grow because as we have a population of children who are diagnosed at a higher rate with autism, this is something, if we get in front of it now, I think is important. What do you say to people who worry that, or point to the idea that, well, you know, if they're going to have $330 million in additional wages for these caregivers, where's that money going to come from? Why is this a place that we won't spend more money on? But it's the kind of thing where we're not all suffering. People aren't feeling it yet, really. Not enough. It's not, like you said, it's not penetrating. We keep talking about how we don't have a budget, and yet people aren't, they're not up in arms about those who are really suffering.
Well, 'cause
we
talk a lot about outputs and not outcomes. We don't talk enough about, like, first of all, what's $330 million going to buy? And what happens if you don't make that investment? And if you don't make the investment, how much is it going to cost taxpayers? And how many people are going to end up in these long-term assisted living facilities? And how much are going to be paid for by Medicaid dollars?
Right.
And how much does it cost taxpayers every time somebody doesn't realize their potential, not live out a full life? And how much does it cost in healthcare? How much does it cost in other kinds of treatment? And how much does it cost in medication? How much does it cost? Whatever the thing. And there isn't enough thought process going into that. And people will say, and then I'll say to you, as someone who worked in the General Assembly, there are several hundred special use funds that are created mm-hmm. by special interest groups that are protected.
There's like a salmon fund in Illinois.
There's standing balances of an excess of $1 billion that you can access these funds.
Right.
And you could draw from these funds and you can help children who are, you know, children and families. And that's the important thing. You can help children. You can help their families. You can help improve their quality of life. These are hardworking mm-hmm. people. And if the government isn't going to be working for hardworking people and people, regardless of the challenge, whether it's you're trying to get your kid into college or if your kid has special needs, the government needs to be working for taxpayers. And this is an example where the government has let people down. And it just has to stop and it has to end. And people just have to make a decision. You know, right now, my decision that I made, I was like, okay, I'm going to leave Springfield and I'm going to try and work directly with kids who are struggling. And I'm going to try and raise money from, you know, independent from private sources. I'm still going to be working in conjunction with the public sector to make sure it's as effectively as it possibly can be. But I thought, okay, in my universe, in 2,800 children and families, what can I do to make sure that life is better? But there are enough people down there in Springfield who get it, who really, truly understand. And they just need to figure out a way to step up and say, you know what, this isn't that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. What's a bigger deal if we don't do it and it costs so much more? And voters aren't dumb. People aren't dumb. And they'll put through the math. You're like, oh, you mean to tell me if you put $330 million that if you spend this is what it's for? Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it
to save lives, to improve the quality of the life that people are living in these group homes and their families. As you mentioned, I mean, this is also a drain on the economy when it comes to families who have to struggle, whether it's to try to pay for the services or the emotional toil that has this. I can't even begin to wrap my mind. As it is, the divorce rate for families who have a child with a disability is over 72%.
I thought it was like up to 80%.
I heard it was anywhere between 72 and 80, yeah. But I always go with a lower number because people seem to think, oh, that can't be. But you know what can't be? 42 individuals who have lost their lives in group homes at the hands of individuals who should have been helping them. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children live happier, healthier lives. When we talk about senses, I know that I've always heard that when you can't see anything, it changes your ability to hear and perhaps taste. And 6018 North is inviting diners to eat in the dark during blackout dinners as a fundraiser. And I'm fascinated to hear about this. I know that you're also working with Chicago Lighthouse. Joining us in studio is Tricia, who is the director of this event of 6018 North. Tell us first a little bit about 6018 North. Oh, let me see, right there. Hello.
Hi. So it's a dilapidated mansion in Edgewater, and it's filled from literally the basement to the ballroom with installations of experimental art, from a wall of leaves to a chapel.
And what drew artists to this venue? I mean, I hadn't heard of 6018 North before.
So I was a curator at the MCA, and since branched out and started this space because I lived in Edgewater. And because the house had a flood, it opened up the space in a way that artists could create by literally doing work in the walls, on the floors, in the basement, ballroom, et cetera.
How did you come across this building? Was it something that you acquired from the city, or was it something?
I wish it was something I acquired. Well, my husband and I bought it during the financial meltdown or crisis.
The housing bubble?
The housing bubble.
Mm-hmm. So it had been abandoned or turned over to the bank?
No, it was actually caught up in a lawsuit with the Edgewater Historical Society because the previous owner wanted to sell the building to a developer, and the Edgewater Historical Society wanted to save it because it was one of then 12 mansions left in the neighborhood.
In Edgewater. For those who aren't familiar with the area, can you tell us a little bit? I know that we also have Katrina, who's the executive director of the Edgewater Chamber of Commerce. What do you want to tell people about this neighborhood that edges the water?
So Edgewater is such a great neighborhood, one of the real gems of the north side of Chicago. So it's, for those of you who don't know, it's almost the furthest north neighborhood you can get. There's only one further, and that's Rogers Park. You mentioned mm-hmm. you're from
Senator Katowski, your old hood.
Mm-hmm. And we're right on the lakefront, so abutting the lakefront, there are lots of high-rise condominiums, so people who love to live on the lake, that's a really nice affordable option with beaches. And then you start heading further west, and you start to get some of the mansions that Tricia was talking about, the single-family homes, and a lot of the people in Edgewater have been there a long time. Once they come, they want to stay. And then it's also been this really great mix of a welcoming place for immigrants and people new to this country who come and make Edgewater their home.
It is a great neighborhood, and it's very mm-hmm. close to Loyola University. Now, is it Loyola University? City, mm-hmm. Which gives you access also to, you know, the theater there and the student life. And if you want to take courses, perhaps as an adult, you know, continuing. What are you smiling at, Senator?
Because I love the neighborhood.
It's a great neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a great neighborhood.
With the mansions that you were talking about that they were trying to protect as part of the historical preservation, what were the rich families perhaps that we might know about? Or were there, do you know anything about the background of those mansions?
So a lot of, originally, the mansions, a lot of people might know about the Edgewater Beach Apartments, which is the pink building, as we like to call it.
Yes.
That Edgewater used to be a destination for people in the city to vacation during the summer, or, you know, acts that would come in town would stay at these lavish hotels and some of the mansions that went along with it all the way up on the North Shore. And so this was back in the day when it took a longer time via horse and buggy to get up from downtown to your vacation home in Edgewater.
Right.
So, yeah. Hard to imagine these days. But.
So were you looking for like a mansion type situation to expand to
wasn't
develop.
I'm looking for a mansion.
I mean, but I mean, I don't know how someone acquires it. That's why I was. That's what I was wondering. Like,
well,
how do you?
I found a house in Rogers Park that was much more expensive and much smaller, and then I saw this house, and it seemed like it was cheaper, more affordable, bigger, but it was too big, and I didn't quite know what to do with it.
Right. It wasn't a house that you wanted to live in. Was it always,
I was going to live in it.
Okay.
So, but then we had a flood.
Oh, so the flood happened after you bought the property. I thought you bought it after the flooding. That's what I thought.
So the flood happened after. And
oh,
then
no.
We decided to, it's just a really large project. So then I changed focus because the house then became more of a exhibition space and more of a community center. So
I'm trying to figure out, someone has a flood and they go, well, that seems like too much work to really rebuild all of this. Let's open it up as an art space. I love that.
Only a curator would have that eye towards what can I do?
Once
this
I get rid of all the possible mold, what can I do with this building?
The flood was like cleansing in a way.
It's just, well, it's a reset.
It's just a reset, right? Yeah.
That's so cool. So you are. So the event that you're hosting is in this building. It's do you want to, Lisa, tell it? I rarely ever have a guest who's receiving notes while they're being interviewed. I was just wondering about this event and what inspired you to do the blackout dinners.
So we're going to rebuild because we have to change all the plumbing. There's
right.
no kitchen, so we're actually doing these dinners with no kitchen. There's a bathroom, but there's no bathtub, so you can't live in there.
Oh, right.
And it really has become...
Can't take a bath during the party.
Yeah.
Rats.
Yeah.
It's not inhabitable. It is a space for display.
And so we decided that we're coming to an end, and like the end of a play, you have blackout curtains and the end. And so I had been to one of these dinners in Germany. They started in Zurich, and I went to one in Germany, and I thought this was a really interesting experience because, as Katrina said, the neighborhood is so diverse that all of the things that we do are to try to bring diverse audiences, so artists from all different disciplines, as well as neighbors from literally all over the world, as well as funders, donors, just foodies, and yet have a really intimate encounter because it's very intimate. You're in the dark eating, you're vulnerable. And so yet, even though it's a fundraiser, it's still an intimate, transformative event.
It sounds like a very unique experience too, and I want to find out how the night goes, because I know you've been hosting these since November 3rd on Thursday, Saturdays, and Sundays, and there are just after tonight just two more left, the 19th and 20th. So let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll find out more about 6018 North's blackout dinners, where you can dine in the dark and help raise money for some very important causes. More after this on 720 WGN. Yeah, you're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski. He's now the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children living happier, healthier lives. You can go to childserve.org. It's ChildServe. Leave the E off at the end because your work is not done, sir. You get to work, will you? I don't even know why you're here. You should just be working.
Because I was eating in the dark at home.
Eating in the dark.
It was a very strange experience. Then I had this vision that I was going to meet people. We're having a fundraiser by eating in the dark.
So. Well, I'm very excited to find out more about the blackout dinners, which is at 6018 North, which is actually the address of 6018 North Kenmore.
Yes.
In the Edgewater district. What do you call it? Neighborhood?
Yep.
District. I don't know why I'm calling it a district.
The district.
Well, because, you have this art community, and yes. It does seem like an artful district.
They call art communities districts all over the world.
Yeah, stop it.
Theater district.
A theater district,
yeah.
See?
Exactly.
We do have an Edgewater theater district.
Yeah. It's also a gala, just so you know. It's a gala, not a gala. You're so very wrong in so many ways. Also joining us is Michael Silver.
Hello.
He's a part of IO's...
Musical Armando.
Musical Armando on Friday nights,
yeah.
And we're thrilled to have you in studio again.
Thank you so much.
And you said you've heard of blackout dinners?
I've heard of the concept of blackout dinners. I've never been to one, but I haven't heard of one for charity or So I'm sorry, I'm joining late.
Yes, it's all right.
So I didn't get to hear the beginning.
You didn't do your homework, and now there's a quiz. No, we're quizzing Trisha about this.
Right,
it's very awkward. So tell us a little bit about when people arrive, what can they expect at the blackout dinner?
So you come in, you get Prosecco and snacks, and then you gather in the chapel, and I tell a little bit about the space, kind of what I told you about, and give them a brief overview of the exhibitions, and then I tell them what they're going to experience. And so what I tell them is they're going to be escorted upstairs, so they should probably go to the bathroom before they go. Leave their drinks down here because you'll want your hands, because you go through four different curtains to get to the blackout room.
Do you do sort of like a gradation of less light?
Yeah.
So that it's not a shock of light to darkness.
Right. And as you go up the stairs, it gets darker too.
Is the food on the table when they get there?
No.
Interesting.
Your water is. Perrier.
Yeah, how do the servers bring in? Do they have like night goggles?
Night vision is what I've heard.
Well, no, the servers they range from visually impaired to legally blind.
And that's wonderful.
They're all from the Chicago Lighthouse. And so we've worked very closely with them, and they serve. And so they greet you. It's a very, So I bring them upstairs. They're introduced to the server, and the server introduces, and then says, "Put your left hand on my shoulder. I'm going to walk you through four curtains. I'm going to take you to your seat. Do you want white or red wine?" And so then they're served. So they're seated, and the knife and fork and water glass is there. So you're grounded because those are things that you're, used to when you eat.
Right.
And then once everyone goes through that, then the chef comes out, or the soup comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And soup, we started with soup because it's a big bowl. And so then you know how to it's a big bowl, so you know how to navigate. Like you can hit your soup bowl. And then the chef comes out and tells you what you've eaten. Mm-hmm. Although there's menus downstairs, so you can read the menu, so you know what you're getting.
Right.
And then they clear the plate, the servers clear the plate, and then the entree comes. And then the chef comes out and tells you what you've eaten. And then everyone goes downstairs, and we have dessert in the chapel with a discussion. The servers then ask the diners what it was like to eat in the dark.
Do people typically talk? Are they, when they go in the room and it's really dark, are they talking loudly or are they talking quieter?
So that's a good question, because someone said tonight that it was very loud for them. And it is like it becomes like a typical, almost like a New York restaurant. Mm. But these people were the very first two that were seated in the restaurant. So they heard, because they had very heightened sense, because it was just the two of them in a room, and then 22 other people came afterwards, and it gets louder and louder and louder. And they said, "Is it always like? Were we a really loud group?"
Right. And was that your sense that it was any different than other nights?
No, it was. It was every night. And some of the tables are kind of rowdy too.
Mm-hmm. Are they? Well, in what way? Like, how are they? Are they talking? Are they giggling about how weird?
Like, four people came down and they said, "Oh my God, that's you! You're my new BFF." And they were, they didn't know each other. And
right, because once you sit down, you possibly are not sitting with anyone you came with.
You come with your partner, but they seat you next to each other. And so, if you think at a restaurant, you're usually sitting across from somebody, so you're thrown off right there. And so you're next to someone that you know, and then your table is filled.
How many people are at a table?
Six at a table.
I compare that in my experience to like a wedding reception, right? Like there might be six or eight. And typically at a wedding reception, I'm probably next to the person I'm there with personally.
Mm. Right.
And I don't know if that's the same. But like, so I'm thinking, okay, I'm at a wedding reception. Can't see anything. But I feel like with wedding receptions, at the end of my dinner, I'm like, that's my best friend. Like, and I'm pointing across the table.
Right.
So I totally get that. But that's so fascinating.
I want to go on Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah. This sounds amazing.
Is it only on Sundays right now?
No, tomorrow night as well.
tomorrow night, but we're sold out.
What about Sunday too?
Sunday we still have spaces.
Okay, I have to make a reservation before you go though. Wait a minute.
So what have people's most reactions been? Like ranged from like, I love it, I was uncomfortable, I learned something.
Most people say that their social norms changed, that they stopped judging, or they didn't judge, because your visual sense is how we judge and move through the world, judging. And so they were somewhat shocked at that they didn't, that changed. They didn't have that sense of judgment. And then people with glasses often say they take off their glasses because mm-hmm. they say they're a nuisance to them.
Yeah. Yep.
How does it impact? So they stop judging, and how does that impact the language that they choose to use and what they, what do they begin to talk about? Is there less of a filter then?
Yeah, that's, you got to come and.
Well, it's only
that's a good question, because I haven't asked people like. So then do you have a different conversation?
Right. How does it change things? I know you almost have to have like a debriefing afterwards to find out. But this sounds really wonderful. Again, go to 6018north.org and click on their current events, and you can get information on how to get tickets. Friday night is sold out. I almost hate telling people to try to get tickets for Sunday, because I want to try to – you're not doing it this Saturday?
No.
Okay.
Oh, we are doing it Saturday, but it's sold out.
Oh, that's sold out as well. But Friday and Saturday are both sold out.
We do it Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
We take a break between.
Take a break. Everyone has to reset. Everyone just reset again. Go to 6018north.org for more information on how you can be a part of this wonderful experience. Thank you so much for joining us. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I am your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children lead happier, healthier lives. Thank you so much for the work that you do, sir. It was really wonderful to meet a lot of the young people that have benefited so much from the services that you and your predecessors have provided. It was really nice.
Yeah, they were very inspiring. I mean, just to meet a young man named William who was formerly homeless. Yeah. And now he
didn't want to talk at first, and then I was like, I had to rip the microphone out of his hands. He was great.
Yeah,
he was wonderful.
The spirit. He got the spirit behind him.
He did not want to talk. He, like Michael Silver, also joins us in studio.
Hello.
Is one of the cast members at IO's musical Armando.
Yeah,
I've heard it both ways, and Armando, and it's on Friday nights. But you've seen people who were like shy and don't want to say anything.
Oh, of course.
And you kind of like, you know, say something for them, and then the next thing you know, you're like,
you help them out. Yeah. You grease the pan, and then they're on fire. Like they're going.
And then you're like, where's the baking soda? I have to put this fire out.
It's like a cooking show. That's like a 3-hour tour.
Yep.
But
yeah.
He was great. He was great, and he rallied, and it was just wonderful for him to be able to speak in front of 400 people and deliver.
He did a
like
great
that.
Job.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Wonderful. All the speakers were inspiring. And speaking a lot, Ken J. Gubowski and Eric Elk both joined me in studio. We've done a lot of talking over the last several weeks. I remember before the election, Ken said, you know, we should keep doing this, as though we were ever going to stop talking about what's going on. Here's why I want to continue talking about what's going on in our country, because this is important. I know that people have been frustrated with, one, the elections, and in particular, some people have been frustrated with WGN Radio and the tone that we have had. I think that this is an election like no other, and so we're all trying to figure our way out. So if you hang out with us, you know, be frustrated. We'll be annoyed with each other. That's going to happen, but we're still friends. We're still here to have a conversation, and we always want to provide a place where you can share your thoughts. This isn't just about what we think. It's, you know, we are bouncing it around. Maybe it triggers something. Maybe you agree or disagree, or maybe you have a different take. We always want to hear from you, no matter where you're calling from. We've heard from Georgia to Minnesota. We've heard from Canada. We've heard from, you know, Iowa, all parts of Illinois. 312-981-7200 to call or text to join the conversation. Ken J. Gubowski is a crisis communications expert, and Eric Elk is a political strategist. Do I need to tell people that, like, that you're conservative and that you're liberal? Does that, Eric? Do you feel better know that you're a conservative?
Which one are you saying? Oh,
yes,
okay.
That you are. I don't know. I this is such a weird time now that labels feel now weird, because I think that there are conservatives like yourself who did not support Donald Trump's candidacy.
I think there's a lot of folks like that. But it's, you know, it's an interesting time. But I think, you know, the election's over, and so we need to get behind, you know, the president. I think it's important that he's successful. I hope he is successful.
It is important that he is successful.
And, see, that's what I'm struggling with.
That it, you don't think it's important that he is successful?
What I'm concerned
as a liberal.
About, well,
or as a as an American, I mean,
yeah.
But it goes beyond being conservative or liberal, Republican, Democrat. It's about being an American.
It's about being American. You can be an American and not leave your principles at the door. I mean, I think what I'm concerned about is the normalization of Donald Trump. Tonight, I actually heard somebody on MSNBC of all networks talk about the Trump family as like the Kennedy clan. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, if that's the case, then I'm going to go the next 4 years and I'm not going to watch a news program. I mean, I can't stomach that.
Right.
We try to tell the truth unvarnished when we've been on.
Both of you, absolutely.
Sure, we have. You know, I come at it from a liberal perspective. I was an avid Bernie Sanders supporter. But when it comes to really conveying facts, I think, you know, we try not to live in the post-truth world. We try to tell facts as plainly as we can. And for those who doubt what we're saying, you know, hey, you can look it up. Just don't check on any of those news entities that you can find on Facebook. Go to legitimate news sources.
Okay, speaking of which, I want to bring this up, and I feel very confident about doing this. Former representative of Illinois, John Anthony, who is now working with the Department of Corrections. I believe he's like a deputy director. Mm-hmm. Somebody who still has a large following, has, I think, can have an impact on the community, has done a good job in the past. He posted a story that was from a Blue Lives Matters website, a blog, and it was about how a man had died in an ambulance on the way to the hospital because of protesters. And I sent the link right away to Michael because you were looking for stories and making
and
sure
trying to debunk and helping out. But the thing
did
is,
you
it
ever
wasn't,
find?
It wasn't
you...
a news post. It was a
always a blog.
Blurry. Mm-hmm. It was a Facebook message.
Right.
It was a screenshot Facebook message
of a doctor who said, "I'm so frustrated right now." And all
I don't even. It didn't even seem like a doctor. It seemed like a ambulance tech, which is. I mean, nothing against. That's keep your work, but it was just everything was blurred. It was a Facebook message. It could have been from me to Patty.
Do we know if it was true?
Well, the problem is, I immediately, because John Anthony, former representative John Anthony, has been a legislator
and former law enforcement.
Law enforcement. I immediately texted him and I said, "Hey, I would love to follow this story. I want to know about this. I want to know more. Do you know what town this was? Do you know what law enforcement department this was?" And he said, "I will check for you." He also removed the piece from his Facebook page.
Nice.
And I've repeatedly asked him for more information and he has not responded.
I did some research. I looked up because it was supposedly about, I believe, Monday night, because it was posted, I think, Tuesday, and it said last night. So I looked up protests in the United States, anti-Trump protests, and on Monday night, there were actually incredibly few. Most of the Monday protests were students walking out. So I started looking at the different towns, and I couldn't find anything from the evening protests that supported this at all. And so it was frustrating because there were a lot of other stories that were easily debunkable.
Right.
Just easily from both sides.
Right. People being beaten by protesters
where
or Trump
they had
supporters.
Video that was blatantly from 2015 and multiple news sources cited it. And the one I sent you from the Christian Times website, that website removed it.
Right.
They either didn't know it was fake or got enough backlash and they removed it. But this one I looked into, I found the different protests. I couldn't find a single thing. And I told Patty, though, it's a Facebook message. This is hard to disprove.
Right. Right. And then that's why I was jumping because.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We're getting our information and we're getting riled up. This is what we've done for a year, is getting riled up about stories. And Facebook, the writers and the people who work for Facebook are admitting that they are part of this problem of generating this contention between people.
So during the cycle, there were, according to 538, 7,367,000 shares, reactions, comments on the top 20 stories of 19 major fact-based publications. During the same period, there were 8,711,000 stories from fake election stories.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, so the fakes are outnumbering the legitimate. I mean, it's crazy.
Did you guys hear Mark Zuckerberg's dead?
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault?
No, that was a story today trending from an Australian satire newspaper, that the whole point was Mark Zuckerberg died at 32 after saying that fake news stories weren't in effect or a major part of Facebook.
Right.
It was wonderful. Wonderful.
So what I was, I think it was important to get at is like when people say they want, I think Eric made a good point, but about they want the president to be successful, right? And the question is, how do we define that success, right? And I think what people want to see is if any president, Republican or Democrat, that they're successful in looking out for people who are working hard, trying to take care of their families, make sure that they are able to have a decent life, their kids can have a quality life, that we have a safe, secure, opportunity-filled country for everybody. So that the issue is when you – the question is how do you define that success? And I think that's the point. And I think when people say, well, I don't know what I mean. When you say, well, I want the president to be successful, I don't know what that means. And I think I know what that means, right?
We all have our own independent view of right. what that success
and
is.
And the question is if the president comes out and he says, for example, and he says, I want to do something that I want to deport 3 million people, right? And he makes a statement like that. And the question is, well, what's the grounds for deportation, right? And how do you define that? And whether or not, and like, how are you going to find out whether people are, they're criminals or not? Or, when he makes a statement like that's the question. Or you say, well, how are you going to make sure you realize your goal of taking care of infrastructure and building, which is everything, everybody across the board supports, safe roads, safe bridges, putting people to work, an excellent project. And where is that funds going to come from? And I think those are the questions. I mean, if you have things on the table, you think, well, I think you'll find points where people are like, okay, here's points of common interest, and maybe here are points where we diverge. And I think that's the point. And
from a policy perspective, I'm not that concerned, certainly domestically. I'd love to see an infrastructure plan. I'm kind of neutral. I would benefit from a tax cut, but a tax cut and a major infrastructure spending plan, they don't go together. Okay, so they want to restructure Obamacare. Good luck. The president, that was such a mess. And they want the two items that they want to preserve that Trump has said very adamantly will stay are the two most costly aspects of Obamacare. The rest of it supports those two items. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I look back at this and say, okay, this is what you guys have decided you want to do. Good luck. I want to see how you do this. The Republicans for 8 years have been obstructionist in Washington. It's been just about no matter what came down the pike, they were against it. And they rarely had commonsensical alternatives. So now they're in power. Okay, let's see you guys rev up the brain. And, I want to see some ideas coming from them. So I'm not concerned about that. That's just normal policy back and forth. Eric and I both were talking about coming in. Neither of us are concerned about all these stories about the transition in disarray. Totally overblown story. Every transition at this point in time is in disarray. That's just the nature of the beast. You've got to hire so many people in such a short period of time. You've got to make decisions as to who's going to be appointed to cabinet.
To this extent where you replace, I don't know, and that's why I'm trying to learn. And I think most Americans probably were not familiar with the transition teams. This might be the first time we're hearing of it. Is it to this extent where he names a transition team and then a number of them are replaced at this period?
Well, the transition team has to decide on thousands of hirings. I forget, is it 4,000 political appointees?
It's some crazy number.
Plus the cabinet, plus all the undersecretaries.
Right.
It's an extraordinary task to do in a very short period of time. And it's why oftentimes halfway into the first year, 6 to 8 months in, there's still hundreds of positions that haven't been filled because it's just the human resources element of this is really very onerous. There has to be all kinds of conflicts checks. I'll give you an example.
So, but we've never seen the amount of attention paid on a transition ever before like this.
I think it's because
the scrutiny.
Oh, this is a reality show. Yeah. That's what this is.
It's because it's Trump and he's never
right.
he's never
well,
run
everything.
Government.
Everything
before we go on to the
watched,
before
right?
we go to the transition team, I want to make sure we stay for a moment because Lance has a question about why we should root for the president, but we have to do that when we come back. Let's take a quick break. Lance, your call will be right. The first thing we do when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is State Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO of ChildServe. You can go to childserve.org to find out how you can help volunteer, donate to assist young children who are at risk, lead happier, healthier, better lives. You do a great job. A lot of happy people I saw on Friday night at your gala. Michael Silver.
You did a great job, too.
It was really fun. Anybody That's one of my favorite events I think I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was well done. It was well executed. And I hope everyone had a great time. The food was wonderful. The guests were great. The environment was all... I've done a lot of these events. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, that's so cool to hear. Yeah. I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah, that everybody was so...
It was in the modern art wing of the Art Institute. I mean, how cool is that to hang out there after hours, right?
Oh, yeah. And it just, it's a beautiful... And then those rooms, it's gorgeous. And it was exactly what we were looking for. You know, Patty was the MC and she was terrific.
I was a little overdressed. You say gala and I wear an evening gown. That's all.
Did you feel overdressed?
No, I felt fine. My mom bought me that dress. She wanted me to have something nice for your event specifically. So thank you, Mommy. We are talking with Eric Elk and Ken Jakubowski, who have been guiding me through the last few weeks, along with Dave Lundy, the craziness leading up to the election day. And now we have more craziness. I mean, it's to be expected. It was going to be loony either way. But joining us on the line is Lance, who wanted to join the conversation. Hi, Lance. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I just like to point out double standards and selective memory. You know, everybody, I've been hearing all of this talk lately about you have to get behind this president, you have to root for him for his success, and you have to, you know, fall in line. And I disagree with that. I really do, because when the last president took office, what was their number one agenda on the other side? To make sure he failed.
Eric, they said that no matter what he puts forward, we're going to – hold on. I'll turn your mic on.
They were going to block it.
Were they protesting in the streets?
Well, that the protesting –
they didn't have any reason to protest in the
streets. Yeah, he didn't say
– a lot of people didn't agree with President Obama.
No.
That's different
today. Eric. The tone of the
Eric,
election season,
Eric,
I mean, yeah, come on.
The man is speaking truth.
I mean, you're adorable, and I like having you. Go ahead, Lance. Yes.
That's where the Tea Party came. So there were protests when he took off. That was the birth of the Tea Party protest.
About 2009, 2010,
happened. This stuff happened, and now all of a sudden now the ones who are doing it now are un-American. So how come you have this double standard? You have to support this president, but when the other guy was in office, our goal was to make sure he failed. And see, that's the problem with the Democrats, because now they tried to push infrastructure for the last 8 years, and the Republicans refused. Now, all of a sudden, now since they are in power, they want infrastructure, and the dumb Democrats are going to vote for it.
I would say, this is a conversation my husband and I have had, and I would say, do you think, Senator Katowski, that Democrats are less likely to want to burn everything down to the ground in order to get their desires and wishes through?
Well, I'd say... what they've been saying right now is that they want to work with him, and they've defined the terms of how they're going to work with him. And they said on the areas where there's a profound disagreement, they'll do whatever they can to stop it. So I think they've been very clear about that.
The things that threaten, you know, whether it's individual rights,
people who are Latino, gay or lesbian, immigrants, African American, people of color. You know, anytime or anytime it gets in the way of helping people to, you know, realize you're people with developmental disabilities, they said, this is our draw our line in the sand.
Right.
And what they've indicated is they said, if we will help the president achieve his goals as it relates to helping people work hard and play by the rules to be able to take care of their families and be able to put money in their pocket and be able to reach their retirement and also stand up to these institutions out there who, by the way, need a check and balance on. But the important point to raise here is whether someone protests, right, or someone says something publicly, the fact is people advocate in different ways. And, you know, within days of President Obama taking office, I agree with Lance that they said we're going to do whatever can to make sure he's going to be a one-term president.
Yeah, that was their pledge to each other.
I haven't heard one Democrat say that. Now, people will take issue with it. I haven't heard that yet. I don't know, Eric, if you've heard any Democrat say that yet. And just remember one thing, too. Remember the amount of protests that they were out there when the Affordable Health Care Act was passed, the protests that were occurring out there in response to the Affordable Health Care Act being passed. I don't know if you recall that.
But that I think is different. You're protesting and trying to rally against or for.
That's true.
A single issue. Okay.
Well, let's get back. That's a side thing. But let's get back to the issue. But whether people protest and say, you know, whatever, I disagree with the fact that he was elected, or people say, I'm going to make sure that this person is a one-term president. And then after 2 years of him being in office for 6 years, I'm going to stop everything he does to move forward in terms of his agenda. And we saw that happen. And I don't think that's anything that's not accurate.
Yeah, no, that's a factual depiction of the last 8 years.
But, well, but I'd say
last word for Eric before we go to break.
I'd say this though, at least you know, elections have consequences. 2010 was a good year for Republicans. 2012 was not a bad year for Republicans either. 2014 wasn't bad. So, right. You know, and I think there's a struggle going on now. I mean, it looks like Leader Pelosi may have a fight from Ohio for leader.
I think that's great. I really do. I think that's great. I think because I, you know, all due respect to people who've been in office for a long period of time. And I think this election was in some cases a repudiation of people who are tone deaf to what people are concerned about.
What part of last word to Eric did you not hear?
What's that?
Just teasing. We have to take a break here.
What did you say? Oh, I'm sorry.
Lance, thank you so much for generating a wonderful conversation, and we look forward to hearing from you again. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Eric Elk. And I'm sorry I missed you down in Springfield, by the way, you political strategist, you.
I got stuck in a 6.5 hour.
Did you? I didn't see you in the room. Were you in the room for energy? Where were you?
I was trying to duck from Dave Lundy.
Why were you trying to duck from him? He was sweating hard in the back of the room just waiting for his turn to speak.
I would have been too if I was on the 12th panel of 12 panels.
It was seriously, Senator. I went in there and the room was packed, but they had been there already for hours. And Dave was like, why are you here? I'm like, I want to learn.
I kept getting all these tweets from Dave like the whole day. I'm like,
oh yeah.
My God.
The look on his face, like he just, so they were testifying. There's an energy bill. And I rode to Springfield on the train with a lot of the folks from Exelon. And the fact that they mass exodus when it was their turn or whatever, when it came to the part about clean energy and how it affects, they all got up. And I just want you to know, I wrote down all the organization's names of the people that just walked. I mean, I get that it was a long meeting, but you know what? People stayed and listened to your stuff. Mm-hmm.
That's because they went
but
first.
You have to convince yourself that you're testifying for the historical record.
Right.
So even if there's just one person in the room, you know it's going down in the record and it's going to be available forever. As part of the debate on the issue,
when I was chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, I would do my best to make sure everybody had a chance to testify, because I knew what it was like when I was an advocate to drive down there, and you go down there and you go to testify, and next thing the chairman's like, we're not taking testimony anymore. It's like, what?
Yeah,
we drove for 3 hours to come to Springfield and we didn't have a chance to testify. So I remembered it, and if you were a kid from a college. And you wanted to have something to say something. I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to speak in front of a committee and have your voice heard.
Or if they weren't even going to take a vote, it was just going to be subject matter only.
I know. It's subject matter. Those are often more extensive. Everybody I was listening on the radio. They were going to get a chance to get Springfield. Subject matter hearings is a perfect opportunity to have your voice heard, but to not see the consequence of your voice being heard or see you vote, right?
And Michael, I encourage you, and I encourage all of our listeners to go down. Veto session continues beginning on November 29th and 30th and possibly December 1st. I will be there that Tuesday, the 29th.
You're not going this week?
They're not in this week.
They're not going to be in. So.
Yeah, I'll go with you the next time. It was just this week that I just couldn't.
Yeah, let's go. If people want to meet their legislators, and I had posted something earlier about contacting your legislators, including, you know, Representative John Cabello, who said that people who are afraid are being ridiculous. Mm. Make sure to contact his office because he says he has not heard from anyone who is afraid. Why are you looking at me like that, Senator?
Afraid of what?
No. Of the president during this presidency. Of Donald Trump being the president of the United States, who are concerned for their safety, for what this means
went
for the country.
On the front page of the New York Times, senior advisors of Trump are talking about internment camps. Nah, it's nothing to be.
Yeah,
nothing.
Exactly.
I mean, look
nothing
at his I don't know, Supreme Court justice. Like, look at the list of those people. I don't know about.
One of the gentlemen on the list believes in imprisoning
William Pryor.
Gay men.
Yeah, I'll say his name. I mean, he's known for it. It's also rumored, and I'm going to be looking into this, that badpuppy.com has photos of him from college, and they're online, but...
What's the site?
Bad Puppy? Oh, you don't know? Well,
Michael's here to tell you about
among
it.
Among the LGBT community, it started as a small adult material pornographic website and has grown over the years. He's huge now. And supposedly he was on it and
doing what?
Well, there was a photograph or two or 15. And I'm going to look into that. Again, this is not something I have confirmed myself, but it turns out there was an investigation into it when he was appointed to his court position. And I need to see the document. With most of my research so far, I've found the original documents, the court, like with his when he wrote to the Supreme Court about Lawrence versus Texas, like I found that document. I read a good portion of it. I see what he did and the words he used and all of that stuff. And it was very homophobic and it was very hateful, ridiculous, but in a legal document. I have not found the investigation report that supposedly concluded, yes, these photos are of him. But I do believe with him being on the list that someone will come out with this report, whether debunking or agreeing with. Now,
so do you think it'll tarnish? Are you saying it's some of the kind of thing that will tarnish? I don't know. It seems like all bets are off at this point.
Agreed. Now, the thing is, I worked for an engineering firm for 2.5 years in Florida, right outside of NASA. Now, when you're getting clearance.
Clarence. I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
Clarence? When you're getting.
It's from the movie Airplane.
Yeah, sorry.
When you're getting clearance, they evaluate whether you have things you're hiding, more so than what you're willing to admit. If you have a misdemeanor and it's well known, that's fine. If you have problems in your past, a lot of the times that's fine. It's the things that you're hiding that cause issues, because those can be used against you.
Right. Possibility of blackmail.
Exactly. And so that would potentially be an issue. And that's where I think the investigation for anyone who is in suspicion of anything would come from.
What are you shaking your head for, Senator?
Well, I think the point is that there's a potential for identifying
extreme.
Some hypocrisy here.
Right.
Right. And I think that's the point. What makes me a little bit squeamish is like we can't confirm information. So when we talk about, that's one of the challenges that we're dealing with right now.
Yes.
It's like when, you know, people say things like that and you want to make sure you can be accurate and you can confirm the sources that are out there based on whether or not somebody was engaged in something or if they were not. And so, but I think the true point of this is that people who say things and make statements which are unfair and discriminatory are going to be judged.
Well, it's interesting because Donald Trump was not judged, but he was not. He seemed to not have been judged by those who voted for him, right? I mean, they seem to be swallow all that whole
right
for
right.
some other purpose. So it seems like he is the only one that can do that. No, you don't think so, Eric?
No, I agree with you.
But the other thing
is crazy.
The whole Facebook phenomenon, right? And in the Google phenomenon, I have relatives who voted for Trump out of certain interests, and I do believe some of them just didn't see to a certain extent some of this material that I saw, and therefore didn't believe it enough, you know, or.
I agree. Did people we can go over this over and over and over again as far as the kinds of hateful things that he said, and people can disagree or that it's not that bad, or that's how, you know, your crazy uncle talks. And I don't know if you want your crazy uncle to be the president, but now your crazy uncle is the president.
I don't think you should judge this administration and certainly the president-elect and where they're at now in the transition by what they say.
Right.
You judge them by what they do. And so far, he has done three things that are tangible. He has appointed Rance Priebus, who I thought was a grown-up appointment as chief of staff. Certainly nobody that I would have appointed to anything, but he's had experience. I think it's a solid appointment.
Completely different parties, that's why.
Absolutely. But then he appointed Steve Bannon as chief strategist. And
yeah.
Steve Bannon is the founder of a website that traffics in bigotry, hatred, anti-Semitism,
misogyny.
White nationalism. And it really is the mother of all of these websites that literally sit down and invent stories to make people look bad. He's a despicable human being, and how he can actually be in a major role in White House policy is frankly astounding. And I think it says something really bad about our country to the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
who see this stuff. The reaction in Germany was astounding. They couldn't believe that this guy was going to be in the White House in that policy role. And then tonight, there is a third appointment. General Michael Flynn.
And the general has accepted the appointment? It's confirmed?
I think it's going to be formally announced within the next 24 hours. But Flynn has been appointed National Security Advisor. And I'll just read you one thing. Good old WikiLeaks. This comes from the stolen Colin Powell emails. Mm-hmm. This is an email Colin Powell wrote this September 15th about Flynn. Flynn got fired. I'm quoting Powell. Flynn got fired as head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was abusive with staff, didn't listen, worked against policy, bad management, etc. He has been and was right-wing nutty ever since. Now, the ever since refers to the fact that when he actually was a general, he was fairly well-respected. And then at some point, much like we saw Rudy Giuliani unhinged during this campaign, Flynn went crazy right. And he's now also an avowed Islamophobe. You should also know that General Flynn, when he was head of the DIA, hired his son to be his chief of staff. His son is basically a miniature Steve Bannon. Racist tweets, misogynist tweets, anti-Semitic tweets, public statements left and right. And that is who he is going to also want to bring in as chief of staff right now. So these are the people in the White House. This is unacceptable. And this is where I struggle with, yes, we want the president to succeed because that means the country succeeds. But I'm having my doubts whether I want this guy to succeed. Now, that doesn't mean I want the country to fail. He can fail in many ways.
Right.
He can fail by not delivering on promises, stumbling and bumbling with Obamacare. There's all sorts of things he can do that would have him fall flat on his face.
What do you think... there are a lot of things that he has kind of rolled back as far as the language. Well, obviously, he's not using as harsh of language. Mm-hmm. He has said that as far as the Affordable Care Act, as you mentioned, he wants to keep the two most expensive elements, the ones that people, I believe, like the most, which are pre-existing conditions. You can get insurance. And if you have an adult child living at home up to the age of 26, I think a lot of people appreciated that. But in order to do that, I probably still have to have subsidies, and you have to have, everyone has to get coverage. Otherwise, sure. Everyone has to buy in. Otherwise, how do you offset mm-hmm. those costs?
Yeah, it's good luck to them trying to figure it out. I mean, all they did was try to obstruct it when good people were trying to figure out a solution.
Right.
And thank goodness they came up with something, and now it's on them to try to figure out if they do really want to pull this back and reformulate it.
Right.
Great. Good luck. I mean, I certainly am not going to oppose anything they're trying to do. I want to see actually what they're going to do because
sure.
It's not easy. It's
so you
very
think, I
difficult.
Think the part should bother supporters of President-elect Trump is that that story about the general and trying to figure out what his views are. The part that should really bother them is that he's hiring his son to work in a government position.
Yeah.
Right.
The general.
There's a federal regulation against nepotism.
Right. Well, not only
federal, you have to sign that you're not related to the folks.
Right. The general want to do that, but apparently Trump, Jared, his son-in-law, apparently wants a major role.
So here's the thing. So people out there, and they're fed up with that kind of business as usual, and government serving not the people, right, but serving the people who got elected and their friends and the interest groups that got them elected. That, to me, that gives people a tremendous amount of pause. And people out there in rural America and middle America out there are listening and saying, look, I don't get that kind of break. I didn't get that kind of break for me or for my kids or get them a chance to get a job and having them work. We don't have that kind of nepotism for them so they can be successful. And that's the point. I think we're talking about, again, the point you're saying, Steve, is like your question is whether he's going to be successful or not. I think the issue is successful at what? And when you say success, I think what you're trying to say is, I don't know what – I think you know what you would like him to be successful at. But when people say, like, I don't want the president to be successful, I think the issue is I would like the president to be successful at this, right, and work with him to achieve this. When it comes to some of these things that have been stated, I don't want the president to be successful at achieving white supremacy in the United States of America. That's where I can say that would be a successful thing. Do I want him to help small businesses to be successful? Yes. Do I want him to make sure kids can go to school and to get their college degree and be debt-free? If he's going to do that, great. Are we going to help We're going to help build infrastructure. We're going to help technology companies and things like that. These are the things. We're going to help people who are struggling to make ends meet. Yeah, I want to be successful at that. And I think it's incumbent upon people who would oppose him to define what are the parameters of success that we would like him to see achieve.
Correct, which is not something that we saw the Republicans do with President Obama. They just obstructed everything.
Right.
It wasn't, well, we'll work with you on these things. It was, we're not working with you on anything. And they didn't.
Yeah.
They made it extraordinarily difficult for him to govern for quite some time.
We need to take a break here. 312-981-7200. And I love that my guests don't make it hard for me to govern my show. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Before we continue with my guests, we had a listener call in about what the vote was about. Here's what someone posted. This is from Eric Berg. I am unconcerned that we have different politics, and I don't think less of you because you vote one way and I vote another. No, I think less of you because you watch an adult mock a disabled person in front of a crowd and still supported him. I think less of you because you saw a man spouting clear racism and backed him. I think less of you because you listened to him advocate for war crimes and still thought he should run this country. I think less of you because you watched him equate a woman's worth to her appearance and got on board. It isn't your politics that I find repulsive. It's your personal willingness to support racism, sexism, and cruelty. You sided with a bully when it mattered, and that is something I will never forget. So no, you and I won't be coming together to move forward or whatever. Trump disgusts me, but it is the fact that he doesn't disgust you that will stick with me long after this election. And that is, I think, a sentiment that a lot of people share. And that's written again by a man named Eric Berg. And I think that if you want to know what people are feeling, that's the sentiment.
And that's what I'm struggling with, because I'm deeply concerned that because of the respect for the office and all the pageantry, that's going to be forgotten. And we can't let that be forgotten. The fact that tonight they're talking and they're comparing the Trump kids to the Kennedy family, honest to God, I almost threw up in my mouth. I mean, it's the most incredible thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I mean,
Hold on. James wants to tell you what his thoughts are on Donald Trump and a statement I think he's made about his salary. James, what did you think?
Well, from what you just said a second ago, I think people are really too sensitive.
I'm sorry.
It's bad manners to do what you just said, making fun of a person with disabilities and everything else you said. But you got to get over. It's really with the problems we have. You got to get over these trivial things you mentioned and be a little less sensitive.
James, you're in the suck it up buttercup camp, correct?
I won't know about suck it up, but get over it. Yeah.
That is that camp. Go ahead. Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, people got real problems in their life. Like one example, the people in Flint, Michigan, they're drinking poisonous water.
Who are those people?
You really think?
Who are the people that? Go ahead. Go ahead, Michael, your question.
I'm just curious, like, what is the demographic of Flint, Michigan?
Mostly African American.
Okay, cool. So those are people who probably feel disenfranchised, and they're a minority. And I feel like these people, the minorities, are really concerned. The voices that are not sucking it up buttercup are the oppressed, right, that have been oppressed and have experienced oppression in this nation. And that's my opinion. Whereas the ignored, yes, that is a very serious concern. But there's a difference between ignored and oppressed, and we need to weigh that.
So, and James hadn't called to join on this conversation, so I know that I changed the tone because I read something that someone had written to sort of reflect why people are struggling with this. But James, you had a different point you wanted to make.
Right. The $1 that he accepted to do the job, I mean, that's a show of integrity right there. I don't think anyone's ever done that. Showing integrity.
Senator Katowski, the governor of Illinois has also decided not to take his salary as well. And there's only been, I believe, one other president in the history of the United States who has actually they turned their salary back
who
to
was
charity. Now I have to Google.
It wasn't Kennedy?
It was not Kennedy, no. What are your thoughts on the idea of not taking the salary? Does that show integrity?
Well, I don't know, but I think he better have not taken a salary is my position on that. Because if you're a billionaire and you're a taxpayer advocate and you want to look out for working families, and if you're, you know, saying you're going to take a salary of $275,000, I think it's important that he did that.
Right.
And I think it sends a clear message. I think it stays consistent with the message of his campaign that he's going to he's going to look out for people who are struggling to make ends meet. But I let's make no mistake, it's not a huge sacrifice to do that when you're ridiculously wealthy. And you know, when I was in the Senate for 5 years, I passed legislation to cut our salary. We cut it by $15,000 over a series of 5 years. And if you have two kids and you're not wealthy, that's a little, you know, that was tough for my wife to swallow. She's like, why are you doing that? And this is, so it's public service. Well, this is public service and you're not in it to get wealthy. And if I think every expectation, I had every expectation that he would do that. Anytime a billionaire gets in office, anytime somebody who's very super wealthy, I'm not looking for them to take a salary or get a pension from the government.
Right. And you were correct. It was John F. Kennedy. Craig just informed me that John F. Kennedy did give his entire salary to charity. And President Herbert Hoover also dispensed his salary amongst charity. And
interestingly enough, Herbert Hoover was best friends with John F. Kennedy's father, Joseph P., the ambassador.
Interesting. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is State Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children live happier, healthier lives. Performer, artist, dancer, also quantum physicist Michael Silver joined us in the studio. True story. And we were having this conversation about politics and the fallout and the what lies ahead of us with Ken Jakubowski, who has joined us for the last several weeks. He's a crisis communications specialist and also joining us has been on part of this political conversation team for what has it been now, 5 weeks that we've been doing this, 6 weeks,
five or six? I think this is number 10 or number 11, Eric, or something like that.
Are you holding up there after the long 6.5 hour hearing that you were at for energy in Springfield?
It's good to be back. Good to be back home.
Well, I want to read some of the texts that we've been getting in. First of all, I want to say to Senator Katowski from the 630, the listener is a retired Downers Grove PD. Many interactions with ChildServe, mostly positive. Keep doing what you're doing. Positive role models and mentoring can go a long way. So that's a great one.
That's great.
We also have from the 630, it may be true that no Democrat is wishing Trump to have only one term as president, but I see many misguided Democrats protesting and want Trump to have no term. I think that is worse than what happened to President Obama, don't you? That's from Don. And then we have another one from the 847. The last 8 years of Republican obstruction and attempts to delegitimize the president cannot be allowed to pass without consequence. So we're talking about revenge. If they are, Republicans will behave that way again the next time there's a Democratic president, and we will be in a cycle of Republican obstinacy under Democratic presidents and Democratic attempts to accommodate where possible under Republican presidents. From the 773, the protests remind me of the Vietnam War protests. So those are some of the texts that are coming in, if you want to take any of those. But I think that the wall of no was how quickly we act as though that didn't happen. Because people were saying they wanted change, and yet they didn't change Congress, which was really where a lot of the decisions are made.
Right, right.
Well, the House, Democrats gained seats in the House, they gained seats in the Senate, they lost governorships.
Right.
And, of course, Democrats lost the presidency. So it was kind of a mixed bag in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to Don's point, people are protesting, I think, more out of the initial protests were more out of fear.
Yes.
Than protesting that Donald Trump had won the election.
Mm-hmm.
There, people were scared. By the time you get to day three and day four, who knows what's going on, because so many other people join in that everybody has their own agenda, and the real message kind of gets lost. But I think what's important to understand is that the initial core protests were people who were scared.
Mm-hmm.
And people who, in many, many respects, felt that they were in the crosshairs, given what Trump had said during the campaign. They were taking him seriously, and they were scared to death.
Right. I don't think that's...
Because it affect their lives directly. It could potentially do that.
I don't think it's illogical. And I understand that what people wanted is to make sure, you know, whether it's jobs or infrastructure, a lot of the things that Donald Trump said he would do is bring jobs back from Asia, from Mexico. I don't know that that's possible. The thing is about those jobs is that many of them are done by computer. They're done by robots. They're done. It's not as though it's we can't. We're never going to have the same manufacturing in the United States that we did in the 1960s and 70s. You know, all of the reasons. And we talked about this earlier in the week. You know, when we talk about the changing the tax code or changing the not the tax code but the tax structure. You know, I will say this over and over again. The highest tax bracket in 1950 during Eisenhower, Republican, was 90%. Mm-hmm. It was 90. It was 78 under Kennedy. I mean, is this fine?
It's why same in England. It's why the Rolling Stones moved to France and recorded Exile on Main Street in France.
In order to make sure that I've been trying to understand free market. People talk about free market as though that's a symbol of liberty, but free market does not exist without government. You know, the idea that we want to deregulate and bring down the rules and not have the government involved. Well, you can't have the free market without the government involved. They're not, if you want to have the free market, go outside and you know, go have your farm and be completely isolated and, you know, have your own sort of system. But free market, it has to exist. We have rules. We've all entered into this democracy. Whether we're born into it or decide to come here from other countries.
And, you know, people probably are not aware of this because it's short attention spans, but this effort to bring jobs back to the United States, and in particular direct new jobs into underserved sections of the United States, such as South Central L.A., Harlem, Appalachia, was pioneered by President Bill Clinton, who took an initiative that Reverend Jackson and yours truly started called the Wall Street Project, which was to get corporate America to refocus on the underserved sections of the United States. Instead of opening a plant in the Philippines, open it in Appalachia. There was something called New Markets Tax Initiatives and tax credits that Bill Clinton established, and the Bush administration did their best to kill it off. And I think it's now officially, it may be limp, it may still exist, but it really pretty much died under President Bush. But this was done through a series of tax incentives by President Clinton. So it's not anything new. President Clinton didn't start a trade war. It was just simple tax incentives.
Well, it's funny you bring up the trades, you know, NAFTA people want, you know, I think that Trump said he was going to get rid of NAFTA.
And renegotiate NAFTA.
But I believe Canada and Mexico is like tough. We're not playing. So how do you renegotiate something?
He needs the Canadians to get along with. I mean, they're a signatory to the agreement, and he just cannot unilaterally rip it up.
Right. I mean, and also, didn't China say that they're also you can't renegotiate the global agreement, the climate change agreement that they have? That is different.
It's different. There's different set of rules with that, but it's also complex. I mean,
right. Well, speaking of unilateral decisions, are the cabinet members each of those? Do they have to be approved?
Yes.
And my guess is they will.
Yes.
At what point do any of the Democrats have any or Republicans? Are Republicans going to stand against him on some things? Do you think, Eric?
I think they could. I mean, depending on who some of the appointments are, who he tries to appoint. I mean. You may have somebody like a Rand Paul who tries to put a hold on someone, try to block it. Definitely.
But there's nothing with Bannon and Priebus. Those are his own choices.
That's White House staff. Bannon, right. Priebus, Flynn, that's all White House staff. But Rand Paul already has gone on the record as saying that if John Bolton were nominated for anything, he would do everything he possibly could to prevent that from happening. John McCain has already sent a serious shot across the bow of the president-elect after the conversation with Putin. Word came from Trump headquarters in New York that the conversation went well. Both sides agreed that the countries need to become closer together and become better partners and better friends. And McCain said, no. We're not going down that road. They don't deserve to have full recognition and full friendship status with the United States.
Putin likes to try to co-opt
of course,
other leaders, other countries. So that's definitely
So yes, you will see Republicans in the Congress who will stand up for certain principles, and it becomes difficult for the administration because the people that Trump has surrounded himself with are not exactly folks that are warmly viewed in Washington.
I think you have to figure out what are the whether you're Republican or Democrat, what are the hills that people are going to die on when it comes to opposing appointments? Because even if they oppose appointment, their person's going to be in their position pending the approval. And you can keep prolonging whether or not they're going to be appointed or not, and they'll still be in their position pending the official approval and whether or not the term is 4 years or 6 years, 8 years. But I've been thinking about this while we've been discussing this. There needs to come to a point where people, regardless of their party, just need to say, okay, whatever. You know, you wronged us. We wronged you. We had a disagreement. We have to figure out a way to come to an agreement or everything's going to collapse. And then at the point you're going to say, well, does it matter? Really?
But who brokers that? Who brokers that truce?
There's enough people out there who I think who are centrist or moderates or thoughtful people on both sides of the aisle who are willing to sit down and say, okay, well, let's figure out a way to negotiate some things. And I think it's been very clear and very important when people are defining the terms of what they find to be acceptable or what they'll approve, and they've indicated what they'll support from the president-elect and what they're going to oppose. And I think that's very important in any kind of negotiation, because here's what we've seen in Springfield and what we've seen in Washington. People just say, first of all, it's not acceptable to not do anything. It's just not acceptable. There's too many people work too hard. They're paying too much in taxes, and it's just not acceptable. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of resources. It's a waste of history, by the way. So we can't do this anymore. And so people really need to figure out, but I think there is a desire to really punish people and to go after people.
Well,
and see a consequence.
How many appointments were left open that they refused to vote on under Obama? Weren't there a lot of positions
there were a number of judicial appointments.
A number of them, yeah.
I mean, obviously the most glaring.
And Supreme Court.
Ambassador right. appointments were held up for a long, long time.
And I'm just saying, I don't know what the level of grudge there is on the Democrat side. Eric, you wanted to say something before the break?
So what I was going to say is to the point about they need to be doing something. I mean, I almost side with the idea that I always like it when the legislature is out, whether it's in Springfield or in D.C., because no harm can be done.
It's better when they're not there. What? All right.
If they're not in session.
Spoken like
they can't
a
do
lobbyist.
Any damage. Oh, man. It was an interesting day yesterday. We have I want to talk a little bit about the Electoral College when we come back on 720 WGN. Join us anytime, 312-981-7200. More after this. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is interesting. We've got two texts that kind of address the same thing about get over it, suck it up, buttercup. Some of the phrases that have been used, look, your butt hurt, just go. And by the way, that's the one that I don't understand at all, how that's become. These are things that snowflake, suck it up, buttercup, and butt hurt are all ones that are all part of the I know it's a
what's snowflake.
Snowflake. I don't know. I think it's supposed to mean like, do you think you're special? Like you're unique, like a snowflake. Like there's something unique about you.
I always took it as a little bit derogatory. Maybe like, oh, you're so delicate, like a
oh,
snowflake.
Oh, like you can.
I don't know.
You dissolve
snowflakes
easily.
Melt
easily.
Yeah. Well, you know, if
I'm glad you locked into that one. No one ever locks in a butt hurt like we did, Craig. Nobody. He's like,
well,
please don't ask.
You know, if anti-Semitism and racism and bigotry and misogyny. You know, if that bothers you, and then I guess maybe you are a snowflake, right?
Well, you're from the seven.
I'll be a proud snowflake if that's the case.
I think the people shying away from it are snowflakes.
I would like to remind our texters that when you text us, I have your full phone number. So, but I just want you to remember that. From the 773, the press
to get clarity.
To get clarity. The press that you speak of have done almost nothing to better themselves after 20 or 30 plus years, generation after generation of taxpayer handouts. Opinion, please. That's the 773.
I love that tone.
The people that you
speak of. I know. I read that was exactly how it was written.
Yes.
The people they speak of?
Press of when Michael was talking about the ones that have been left out of the system, those are the individuals living in Flint, Michigan. Yes. Your opinion, please.
I'm kind of speechless.
Whoa. Point. Hey, mark that down. That's a first.
There you go. Let me.
That is a first.
So I think that same people have been talking post-election, like we really have to be sensitive to the concerns of those who are living in different parts of the country geographically and what they're worried about. In that same respect, I think people need to be and try their best to be mindful of the open wounds that exist for people in different parts of the country who may have disagreed with the choice for president. I think because there's a lot of healing that needs to occur because people are hurt. And there, I can't even begin to tell you that, like in our agency, we serve a lot of kids who are Latino, mm-hmm. and their families are afraid. They're frightened, and they're hardworking people. They're trying to take care of their kids. They're trying to have a better life, but they're afraid. And so, how do you heal that chasm? How do you make sure people feel better about it? And that's going to take some time. So I think there's a lot of things like, look, you really need to pay attention to the fact that there are enough people. They disagreed with Secretary Clinton. But on the same token, there are like open wounds out there. And I was talking to you about this week, Patty, because I think men didn't do enough to step up and say that the rhetoric was damaging and hurtful and wrong as it relates to women. I think enough women were saying, well, yeah, this is terrible. You're talking about women this way. I don't think enough men. I don't think enough fathers did. I don't think enough husbands did. I know people said, like, we don't talk this way. The athletes, this was the amazing thing. Athletes were the most vocal group when it came to this.
Locker room talk.
Yeah.
They said, no, this is not. Yeah, right?
But the point is, I think people should be mindful of the fact that it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. We have a new president, and we have to figure out ways to support areas of common interest, but there are some open gaping wounds in this country, and they're not going to be healed overnight. They just won't be.
One of the problems is there's salt being poured in these wounds from both sides. We're seeing swastikas being painted on synagogues and on schools. I'm not going to shy away from this fact. It is real.
Well, and that was happening before. I think I sent you the pictures of Declan's school. There's a school for children who have autism on the far northwest side of Chicago that was vandalized with swastika. This is before. This was in the spring of 2015. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It was 2 weeks before Donald Trump announced his
candidacy. So right before June, right around. So
it was July 15th. Week. I was showing some of the pictures of the school. All around the building, there were swastikas. Get rid of the retarded. Exterminate. Like all these things. And that was 2 weeks. So maybe, Craig, I was thinking about this the day that he announced, and I was like, this could be our president. I think that was still seared into my soul that there was this kind of hatred out there. So I was not surprised at all at the time. So and when you say that not enough people stepped up, I and to the language, not just about women, but about, you know, about the disabled was the one that really got to me. I still am floored. I understand that people feel as though they're being left behind, and that is not something that anyone wants to feel. I don't wish that on anybody. I hope that we find a place. I hope that what you seek in this presidency comes to pass. As we mentioned, we don't want him to fail on the lives of Americans. That being said, we don't have too much time, but we now know that Hillary will win the popular vote possibly by 2%, by a bigger margin than Kennedy won and that Richard Nixon won.
Yeah, about 2 million total popular mm-hmm. votes.
So obviously a lot of people want to know the popular vote versus the Electoral College. And Michael, I know you've done some research on this as well.
I'm here to listen a little bit and maybe some prod and poke at these people who have been in politics and government.
In the trenches,
yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. What I've been doing, we're taught in school the basics, and then we're taught about the three-fifths compromise. I mean, that's a part of it. But I've been researching into the history, the steps it took and the changes that happened to get here. I didn't know we didn't used to vote on a president and a vice president. Second place got vice president.
Right, correct.
That sounds very, like, insane for today's system.
Right.
And so I would just love to hear what you guys have about, because
yeah, can you imagine if it was Donald Trump and Hillary was vice president?
Like that,
that would be interesting.
That'd be very interesting.
You know, and the thing is,
God, that would be interesting.
Well, he used to support her. I think he used to support her financially. I believe. I think he had supported her when she was a U.S. senator. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
but do you think the Electoral College? I still think that because there are parts of the country, isn't that what Congress? Why you have senators and representatives? You know, to the ratio of your population, isn't that the purpose of representation?
Right. There was an article, a reference today in the Sacramento Bee that a person's vote in Montana was 3.48 times more influential than a vote in California.
I did the calculations for all the states yesterday.
Did you?
Yes, I did. And it's strictly based on population and electoral representatives, right, in the Electoral College. And Wyoming is, I think, 3.68. And there's three or four states that are...
Meaning one vote is 3.68 votes in reality because of the weight of the Electoral College.
Yes. Okay. If you're strictly looking at population in Electoral College, and that's because every state has a minimum of three. So if you're a state that has three, even D.C. has a high because of their population, but they get three Electoral College votes. So if you're a state with three, realistically, your voice and your check mark, your X, your mail-in, whatever... Mathematically, if you're in California, you have the least voice. Florida is close to, I think, second with 1.05 that of California. I looked that up because that's where I'm from, and also they have a high amount of electoral votes. But I did a spreadsheet with all of them yesterday, and I normalized it to California because I assumed maybe that's it. It is. California has their vote counts the least if you're talking voice to voice for electoral college votes.
Well, there you go.
That's
so
fascinating.
It is fascinating. And by the way, would we have this conversation if Hillary had won? Do you think that Donald Trump supporters would have wanted to take a look at the... We'll never know.
Sure. Why not? Right. Of course.
Every time, one side loses, yeah. The other side, you know, that the losing side wants to do away with Electoral College.
I mean, right.
There's been 700 times been proposed to... do away with the Electoral College, and it's not happened.
No, and it won't happen.
I'm perfectly content, frankly, just keep everything the way it is.
I agree.
Was strictly unpopular vote, candidates would never go to places like Wyoming. They would go to only high population centers and do nothing but TV ads, TV shows, and rallies.
Perhaps the distribution of it or divide, you know, not having it all as one block is one way to go. But I think that the way it is, there's not much that's going to... By the way, and the faithless electorate, I don't think is going to happen either. You'd have to flip, 40 people?
Isn't there... There's a great quote. Madison said it back at the turn of 1800, that century, that it was that the Electoral College, one of the biggest reasons is to prevent... some tyrant from coming in and inspiring whether a majority or a minority from acting on passion to disenfranchise other citizens. And I, from my perspective, that might be, I mean, this is what he perceived as their job.
Yeah.
And we're seeing disenfranchisement. We already saw some Georgia stuff happening with a bill that was interpreted to be against Muslim women wearing hijabs. We've already seen some movements in that direction. And so it is, sorry if pronunciation is an issue for me, but who knows how these electoral voters are going to interpret this?
Well, there was a concern also in the South of being able to maintain their voice in this process. And, you know, Jefferson had his opinion on this matter as well. Yeah. So this goes back into the framers of the constitutions and the checks and balances they were looking into the process. You know, the fact is, we're not having this conversation about the Electoral College and people are talking about not eliminating it. Based on the formula that, or the information you presented, it's like, well, you should reform it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to have the Electoral College, it should be based on the population. It should be fair. It should be consistent. And that, to me, that's the conversation we should be having.
That's a little slower than I wanted. It's a little slower than I wanted, I think. Isn't that better? You like the last one better?
Yeah, wasn't that Keen?
It was fun.
I love. He's gonna be here really soon. It's so appropriate.
How about this?
Yes.
Better?
Yes, that's Keen, baby.
Oh, yeah, solid.
He's in Chicago, I think, in the next week or two.
Really?
Yeah. They just announced it today, I think.
That's Michael Silver, Senator Dan Katowski, and we also have Ken Jacobowski, as well as Eric Elk in studio. We've been having a discussion about what's going on now with the Trump administration, the president-elect's choices for his cabinet, a little bit of the Electoral College. There's a lot to talk about, and it's going to be an interesting 4 years. If people thought we talked a lot about Trump before, strap yourselves in. David, what did you want to talk to us about? Hi.
Morning.
Good morning.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
You know, the core values and principles of this country were not founded upon building walls and putting up barriers.
Right.
If they were, most of us wouldn't be here today. We were already a very racially divided country.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are also a very politically divided country. My question to you is, when was the last time this country elected a president who had no prior political experience and had never held a political office.
Well, there have been a couple of generals. I know that General Eisenhower and General Grant did not have previous political experience. I think a lot of people would say as war heroes, as men who obviously directed entire armies in battle.
Oh, that's an incredibly political position.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to know how to work it.
So those are two. Can you think of other presidents that had no previous...
From the general public, I'm playing catch up with a lot of this. Like, I'm learning a lot since this election. The actor, Reagan?
Well, Reagan was governor of California.
I was going to say, so I think a lot of people don't know that, though. I think a lot of people were told he's an actor who became president. And right. So thank you because I assumed you guys would have pointed out. So I was like, cool, he must have been a politician. Thank you guys for saying that.
You know, he had substantial experience. That's one of the... I think during one of the breaks, the senator pointed out, you know, and asked the question, have we ever seen this much coverage at this stage of the minutiae of a transition? And I would say absolutely not. And I think it's because of the uniqueness of this election, certainly heightened by the fact that Donald Trump has no experience in government whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an extra emphasis on following every single thing that he's doing. But don't get too... Don't get too drawn into that.
Yeah, I don't see too much. I mean, I mentioned Eisenhower and Grant. I also, Grover Cleveland had been the mayor of Buffalo, New York for less than 1 year when he became represented the Democrats in the governor's race, and he won that and then became president. Woodrow Wilson was an academic and president of Princeton University and then governor of New Jersey for 2 years before winning his presidency. And then George W. Bush, who was...
Governor of Texas.
The governor, no, not George W. George H.W. Hold on, let me see.
He had been vice president served in multiple head of the CIA.
I'm not sure which is why this one. This is George W. Bush. Yeah. Had the pedigree of a president. He lost a congressional race in 1978, minority owning partnership in the Texas Rangers Baseball Club, and then became governor of Texas.
Which is pretty much, right? The governor of Texas is basically it's a photo op. You don't do much as the governor of Texas. You have very little power.
I like Dan Richards.
Yeah,
he was fiery.
Did you know? Very little power. The way Texas is structured.
How often do they meet?
Every other year.
Oh, really? Every 2 years.
Yeah, but it's a great bully pulpit, and Ann Richards used it beautifully, didn't she?
She did.
She really did.
David, did you have any other questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I hope that his presidency will not be remembered by a lack of ineffectiveness, and that I doubt whether he's going to be able to accomplish much. When the Republican convention was held in Cleveland, the governor himself of the state of Ohio was a Republican and did not support him, did not appear at the convention. And I just pray to God that... He's followed by higher principles than what his reputation seems to stand for. Most of all, that a house divided shall not stand.
Yeah, this is these are some rough waters we're in, but I think that I hope that it and I know that I laughed at somebody who told us to just get over it. I mean, I think when you're told to get over something, I'm pretty sure that laughing at that is okay.
It doesn't work at home.
Get over it.
It's not a good strategy with my bride.
I don't think of it as something I don't know why get over it would be the tact. I think it's like we're all working our way through the people who voted one way and the people who voted another. If people want to celebrate, that's one thing. And if I'm not celebrating, I think that's not something.
Look, if you say get over it, you might as well say not talk to the person.
Right.
You don't matter.
Exactly.
If you want to build a relationship, take 5 seconds to hear what they have to say or 10 seconds and see if you can find a point of common interest.
It's dismissive. Yes, Eric?
So to the caller's point real quick in terms of how many folks had political experience previously, there was a study a year ago, almost November 23, 2015, by Pew Research Center on the distrust Americans' view of their government.
Right.
And so the study pointed out that 56% of Americans acknowledge that the problems facing the country don't have clear solutions, but 55% say ordinary Americans could do a better job of solving the national problems than elected officials.
Right. They don't want lifelong politicians. They don't want public servants. They want someone to come through. That actually brings up another point. David, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. One of the other things is I read that Donald Trump is running into some a little bit of a wall when it comes to the idea of term limits.
Oh, not just a little bit of a wall.
I mean, like, you got to convince the people.
That's dead on, it's DOA, dead on arrival. But, yeah, he is apparently one of the things that has leaked out is that there is intense interest in pushing a congressional term limit.
Would that ever pass?
No.
I mean, like, under any presidency, unless this was an overhaul of some sort.
There was a whole huge national push, especially back in the 90s, on that, you know, that impacted folks like Don Manzullo years ago, who had signed the pledge, the term limit pledge. And, you know, so many folks, especially in the House, kind of take the viewpoint that you have term limits every 2 years. Those House members are up.
And the votes turn it over.
That's what my dad said. If a guy's not doing his job, the voters limit his term.
The biggest problem that we have, I introduced the bill with term limits for legislators in leadership positions. And I think that's the biggest problem we have. And So when you do your research on your bill, we went to the Legislative Reference Bureau and we went back in time, and it was a bill that was proposed, the whole contract with America, right? And it was proposed by Republicans, and it never went anywhere. It was their own bill. Yeah. Never went anywhere, but once they were in leadership positions, they didn't think it was important to get it passed. But the point was, I think...
Convenient.
Well, it's one of these things that seems like a good concept.
They only had one term.
Well, I know, but it seems like a good idea until you get into a position of power. But the point of this is, whether you're Republican or Democrat, this is the greatest challenge that we've faced in our country, in D.C. and in Illinois, when people are in positions of leadership for too long. Because then it means that the ideas become stale. They're not as accessible. They're not as approachable. They're not reflecting what taxpayers are going through, because it's more about them keeping their position than it is about.
Right. 2 points on that real quick. First, I would say, well, three things. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. And the other is, so we just had our election. In Illinois, we will start circulating petitions in about 8.5-9 months for the next election cycle. So try to wrap your head around that.
Right, because a lot of the representatives are there. I mean, all the representatives are up every 2 years.
Well, and for the state Senate, folks who are up. But then the other thing is the amount of money that is spent, or the amount of money it costs to run elections. Half the time, the folks in D.C. have to spend their time raising money. I mean, it's really become insane, and I think that campaign finance reform needs to be tweaked a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I've actually written some papers on free television time for congressional candidates, not for Senate candidates. Senators, people who run for Senate typically are very well known, but people who run for Congress, there is a huge competitive disadvantage. The person who is the incumbent has a big name favorability, invisibility advantage over the challenger. So the idea would be to award a certain number of minutes of free TV time to the chairman of each party, and they can decide how they want to apportion it amongst the congressional races across the country. It gives more power to the parties, to the chairpersons. If you could get on TV as a challenger and not have to pay for it, it's better off, I think, for the country.
Eric, you don't see that happening, do you?
Competitive elections.
If that was happening in Illinois now, that means Speaker Madigan would control that TV time? I don't know.
For the Democratic Party.
Right.
There would be one on the opposite side.
Right.
The Republicans, and they could each choose as to how they would want it, how they'd want to use the time.
Do you remember when WTTW used to have that? I don't see do that anymore, where people running for Congress, do you remember? They would have their spots, and they can get up there, they would speak, and they'd have free time. And I don't know, it was over span. I remember this because when prior to Governor Blagojevich being in his position, he was running for Congress and he got up there and he was just, you know, he presented on TTW and there's a series of candidates. And I thought to myself, well, this is a perfect way you can get access to WTTW, very well respected.
Senator, they did have some.
They did this year?
Yes.
Oh,
because I watched them from like the comptroller and all that.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
They did a congressional people as well, too?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I okay. I saw a few. They were all online too.
I think the next few races are going to be Snapchat, Instagram. I don't know why you're just not
Facebook
constantly
Live.
Facebook Live.
Yeah.
I mean,
Trump went Facebook Live already.
You can reach, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people all at once with a Facebook Live video. You know, if you're savvy about it and fun about it, and you know, and if you can break through that and be just kind of this cool, accessible candidate.
Yeah, that's, you know, part of that is kind of neat in some respect, because I remember, you know, for years, because it was really hard to get in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Because people were like, I'd run something. I thought it was a really good idea and it was going to make a difference. And it was like, well, why didn't my name get in the newspaper on this? Because it was important. And now it's kind of like, well, you can kind of
generate
your own press. And you know, for people who took advantage of the fact that it's out there, well, they know how to get connect with voters.
Well, that's the thing with Twitter, was that it was with Donald Trump, it was all caustic and bizarre and weird, but it was like you couldn't stop looking at it.
What do you get? Something like $5 billion worth of free earned media?
That's what I'm saying, because when Hillary would tweet, it was always stiff and like, it was like, what? Who wrote this for you? I mean, it wasn't.
The best thing, she was with Zach Galifianakis between the ferns. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, that was the best thing she did.
But you know what? I know you were about to say something, but it was very like, I think the thing I really thought she should have done, I think she just stopped talking about him like about a month before the election. It would have driven him crazy.
Yeah. Just don't give him any attention.
Well, Eric and I have talked about this. My theory on this is that, you know, all of Hillary's supporters thought, and the analysts, independent analysts, thought that during the first debate she was marvelous in that she kept throwing out this little bait and Trump would go for it. And she stood out of the way, and Trump, in the first debate, pretty much made a fool out of himself multiple times. I actually think he did that to her in the last few weeks of the campaign.
Yeah,
because I think he figured out, hey, she's not. When the more she talks about me, she's not talking to voters about the economy. She's not connecting with them, and that's exactly what she did the last 2 weeks. That's what that was her whole campaign. Now she says that she had to do that because of Comey. I'm not so sure that that's the case. It was all focused on Trump, how bad Trump was. There was never a, here's how bad this guy is. Now, put that aside. Here's why I am better from a policy perspective.
Here's what I can do for you. Here's how I can help you.
Right. Here's how I can help you. Here's how why I'm going to, let me be your champion. That plus all the other stuff about him. There's no way you'd vote for him. She never did that once. Nope. Never connected with the voters that way.
When we come back, tell me something good. 312-981-7200 if you want to tell us something good. Thank you so much for all our callers and listeners and our texters who've joined the conversation. By the way, one last thing from our text. It's easy to say get over it when you're white and being supported by this country when you are the target. All this man's hatred, it's just not that easy to get over. More after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, sharing my travel plans with our guests in studio. I am. I'm excited. I'm going to Los Angeles the week of December 10th, so I will be off that week. Craig, what are your travel plans? Tell me something good. Are you taking off some time? Because you and I, like, we stack up all of our days off until December.
You know, I just realized that Stephanie has asked several times for that, and I just forgot about it. So I'm going to probably take time off.
Yeah,
I still haven't planned that out yet.
You have to take some time off, Craig.
I looked at the schedule. I'm working all of December, so...
You
probably
can
switch that. Yeah, I'm going to switch that.
Yeah, I'm going to. I have like, she told me I have like 20. I work on holidays.
Me too.
We work on, Craig and I both worked like on Memorial Day and Labor Day. And so those are on top of our personal days and our paid vacation. I've never worked a job before this where I had paid vacation, so I don't know what to do with that. I've never been told, go ahead and take some time off.
I think you'll be able to figure it out.
It's my third year in a row that Craig and I both, like second year in a row where Craig and I are like, oh, we didn't take it. I love this. I love doing this. I get to come and hang out with friends, have great conversation like we have tonight with Eric Elk. Tell me something good, Eric.
It's 72 and it's mid-November. How about that?
It's
Chicago.
Fantastic. Yeah. It was a very nice day. Ken, do you have something good to tell us?
Well, it seems like every time we do one of these tell me something goods, I have a story about my my daughter.
She's so sweet.
So tonight, I'm a huge sports fan. And my daughter, you know, she's shown passing interest so far. Usually when girls play only. Tonight, she actually sat in my lap and we watched an entire basketball game. And she was totally engaged.
What?
Well, first time ever. It was SMU versus Pittsburgh.
Awesome.
Out of Madison Square Garden, New York. 6.5.
Nice. Wow.
And it was great. She understood it. And she loves basketball. She likes playing it, but she has never, ever watched a sporting event with me where she was really engaged. Usually it's like, okay, Dad, can I go back and play now? But this time she wanted to, all the way through, she was following.
It's almost like she thought you needed it too.
I'll tell you what, after the last week, it's been a rough week. So yeah that That's was, sweet. It was the highlight of the week.
Michael, you want to tell us something good?
Yeah, I have two somethings that are related. Got an academic paper published last week.
Congratulations.
And this week, I submitted my first author paper, which means I'm the one who conducted the majority of the research and wrote it up and everything with support from others. So we hope that one gets through, but even just submitting it is...
It's quantum physics. I won't understand a word of it, but I look forward to reading it.
The submission took 2.5 hours of me and on the website and trying to upload this thing.
Oh,
it was awesome.
Senator
congratulations.
Thanks.
I met with a company today. It's called 3 Points, and they're going to try and train one of our young people to hire. They're a technology company to try and work there and get them prepared for a life of success. So
that's wonderful.
I'm excited about that.
That's very cool. Craig, tell us something good. Come on. Tell us.
I just realized I have a whole bunch of vacation to take.
Esmeralda, tell us something good.
I bought some cheapy ramen so I can make ramen later.
Such good comfort food. It's exciting, Senator Katowski. Vic Vaughn, before I throw it to you, do you have anything good to tell us?
We're getting snow tomorrow.
That's
good to me.
You don't understand how this bit goes. This is Chicago's
Tell me something good, now tell me something terrible.
Depends if you like cold weather.
Tell me something's going to depress me.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
I live in Chicago. I like cold weather.
You and Tom Skillen are having a great night.